Always have to check, is the sound working okay? Goes in and out. I got the earbuds again. So I guess I'll talk about awareness. It's like a metta retreat when we're teaching metta retreats. By the fourth day, we go, what'll I talk about now? Oh, metta. Anyway. I'm doing this online. There's something to me very satisfying about sitting here and watching all the little tiles clip in, and then the number goes up, 27, 28, 29. It's like very, in teaching in a retreat, I mean, we couldn't win, it's like 100 people, but I often find my mind gets in the habit partway through a sitting, and I know I'm not the only teacher who does this. It's a little bit of like a zone out, right? Of counting how many people are in the hall. I don't know why we do it, like only 32 people, and I know there's 47 people on the retreat. Where were they? You know, even though we tell people to do their own schedule, but still there's this like control. Where are they? What are they doing? But I've got you all in your little squares. Okay. Awareness, right? That's the topic. I want to go on a bit more. Coming off of what Andre was talking about this morning, the perseverance, the steadiness, because this is really the key to the arising of wisdom and all the different levels, from the really obvious to the really profound levels of understanding deeply the nature of mind and body, and sets the condition for panya, for wisdom, for liberating wisdom. And it's often people say, and I think a couple people kind of intimated in the group today, that it can feel at times when we're doing this particular style, as we've been presenting it, of awareness, but not trying to choose what's arising and not trying to stop something from arising. We just say, well, whatever's happening, we'll go, yeah, well, were you aware of it? Fine. And sometimes people, you know, it feels more, you know, permissive or more kind, but it's hard to trust because it feels like too comfortable, too easy sometimes. And I said, I think I said in the group, but it's true, I say to myself as well, part of the feeling that it's relaxed and easy is because with right attitude, just meeting with right view, just meeting whatever's occurring, when there's right view in the mind that's aware, when there's not torments, kalesa, in the mind that's aware, then there's not a sense of resistance to whatever's occurring. There's not this struggle. What's occurring may be unpleasant, but there's not this struggle about it. And so that we're allowing, it does feel more kind. It does feel easier. But, whatever. Sometimes, and nobody here, of course, nobody here, but sometimes when people start this practice, because you all have deep commitment, I really meant it, nobody here. But sometimes when people are like exploring different practices and they come on this one, go, yeah, this is great, because I can just like la-la around and be with whatever. But actually, the steadiness of the awareness, the perseverance, the third job of the yogi, as I was calling it, it's really 24/7. The willingness, you can't hold on to the awareness, but to remember it and to cultivate this trust, this confidence in awareness, no matter what's occurring. This willingness to bring it along with us, no matter what we're doing. This is actually radical. And in a way, it's demanding, not in a way of being stressful, but it actually calls forth from us our deepest commitment to Dhamma and awakening. It really is. And without that, you can just lollygag around in this style and have some nice insights, and you know, and it's nice. And then, okay, that's enough for now. Okay, I spaced out. That's okay, I spaced out. It doesn't matter. But in a really, who cares, it doesn't matter kind of way. And I think, people I know, even long-term yogis who haven't really sincerely practiced in this way for some time, but have dipped a toe in, so to speak, or just heard about it, don't really quite get the depth of commitment and the real love of practice of awareness and awakening that it calls forth. Because it calls forth the commitment, it is the virya, the energy, the effort, the aditana, the resolution to be with in this moment of awareness, whatever it is that's arising. And we know how often what's arising, we'd give anything not to have to be with it, right? And so here we all are doing this. First I want to honor and hope that you honor, this isn't just some like the easy way out. Because if you really stick with this, and it's not just on the 7-day retreat, the thing about this style is it brings awareness into all aspects of our life and not just on retreat. I mean, other practices do that too. I'm not trying to somehow say this is the best one. I really would never say that. Because if you really cultivate getting a sense of what awareness with right view is, right attitude, just that being fully present, that's not a technique. That's awareness. You can bring that awareness with right attitude to any Vipassana or some shamatha technique you want to. It's not about this technique versus that technique. What we're learning here to recognize and trust is, awareness. This is what's happening now with a quality of mind that's in that moment with when there's right view. It's free from wanting and aversion and judging and making it all about me. That quality of awareness can meet any aspect of experience, physical or mental. So I just want to put that in so we don't really support not getting into this practice. Somehow then how do you use it if you want to do shamatha practice? Awareness with right view, that's available for anything. We've said that a million times. Anything means anything. It doesn't mean anything except shamatha practice or something else. It means anything. Okay, this is a complete detour from what I was going to say. It's going to be like that today, I'm afraid. A friend just texted me that I'm not an astrology person, but you know, everyone always texts you and, everything's in retrograde and the stars are all crazy and nothing's working. I just got a text like that. And I noticed with awareness, so everything's all over. So that's why my mind isn't focused and it's okay. And it's just what was happening. There's a sound. There's little marks on this thing that my mind puts into words that have a meaning that I've learned from the past. I mean, it's so far out when you look at what's really happening. Reading is an amazing thing. These little squiggle marks. And if I press a certain button, it goes into the German language. And those little squiggle marks make a lot less sense to me. I can, you know, pick out some and not the others. But what's happening? Seeing and looking and the mind's interpreting and memory and then all that emotional response. That's what's happening in the moment, just in this moment. It's amazing. We put it all together into this whole story of me and then we suffer over and over. Okay, so I'm going to talk about perseverance. So that's it. That's really the right attitude with this commitment to remember again that, sure, we're not always going to be able to be with stuff, but the willingness to again, remember, is the conditions, the steadiness of awareness as it grows over a period of a retreat and over the period of our life, at the times that it's more steady, then all the different arising and passing phenomena are coming and this is the condition for panya, for wisdom to arise. Panya meaning, sure, there's the intellectual wisdom. I'm talking, you're listening, we're talking about stuff. And that's a kind of an intellectual wisdom. I'm talking about the panya, the insight wisdom, transformative wisdom or intuitive wisdom, you can say, where suddenly the mind goes, that's what's happening, right? You know what I mean? Little things, big things, complicated things, simple things. The steadiness of awareness with right view, with right attitude, that's the condition that's allowing wisdom to arise. And wisdom with itself, it brings along, it feeds all the wholesome, the beautiful qualities that arise in the mind and heart. it starves the difficult qualities, the wanting, the aversion, the meing, all of that. It starves it. In other words, it may be aware of aversion, but as I think Andrea said, the awareness itself is not averse. So even if the aversion keeps going, the awareness and the wisdom isn't feeding it. It's learning from it. Very different things. So this steadiness, the perseverance, it's really the key that, to me, it's so simple, but it's so powerful that allows for the wisdom, and this unlocks all the confusions. What really allows us to understand the nature of life, the nature of our mind and body. And this quotation from Keelung Rinpoche, when we understand the nature, to understand the nature of our mind is to understand the nature of all phenomena. That's a powerful statement. But because the way so-called my mind or our minds are working is the nature of all phenomena. Because it's all, as we say, one way of looking at right view is whatever's occurring is nature. It's natural. There's no, as you know, self-evident, self-contained experience. So whatever's happening in this moment, hearing, seeing, smelling, tasting, physical sensation, the whole mental realm, thoughts, moods, whatever's arising right now, is arising as the effect of all kinds of different conditions, right? It's the effect of all kinds of conditions coming together right in this moment. Intellectually, can we agree? Can that make sense intellectually? But this intellectually helps us to keep looking. It doesn't necessarily transform our understanding, right? We can think about it. But in that way, then this moment could not possibly, I think I said this yesterday, it couldn't possibly be any different. The next moment will be different. This couldn't, all the conditions have come together and it's like this. But, and it's not that we're going to be able to see all the conditions, they're myriad, they're infinite, right? Nothing can be pulled out separate. But what the steadiness of awareness can do is with that interest, with that curiosity, just to see what's happening now. And now, the steadiness is what allows the wisdom of seeing different conditions arising and the effect that they have in the mind, in the body, in our speech, in our actions. And that's what can make all the difference. Oh, that's what's really happening. From the most simple level of experience to the most complex and profound of the sense of self and seeing through that. To the impermanence, anatta, dukkha. So I could just say that. I just want to give a few examples to try and just get you, I'm going to get you thinking about it. We will think about it, but that's okay. Thinking's just arising now, just knowing it. But it's the condition for panya. So just steady noticing without taking it too personally, because then we get all caught up. We can see what's really going on as opposed to our ideas about it. So simple retreat examples. It's easy to give retreat examples where we see the cause and effect and where's, okay. So Tejaniya gives this example. It's a common one for people who are meditating, which is sounds, especially if you're in a retreat center, but even at home, you know, like, people can say, well, I'm meditating, and then the family's making all this noise, it's in the way, or whatever. I think we can relate to that. So he gave an example for himself years ago. He was sitting, maybe you've heard it, because everything I've heard, you've probably heard, because he says the same stuff over and over, just like the rest of us. But he was sitting in a meditation hall, I guess, and listening to his teacher, Shuiyu Min, who was totally devoted to. And as is always the case in Burma, there's a lot of noise going on. We think some ambient noise, you know, someone closes the door, we get all, you know, a little bit worked up. You want to hear ambient noise. And I know you've heard these stories, but anyway, I'm getting sidetracked. I'm sorry. It's the planets. It's not me. Once I was sitting with him, and it was one of those times, you know, the villages around will rent these Gundo loudspeakers. I mean, as tall as this room, and play really, really, really loud music for 24, 48 hours straight to celebrate a wedding or something. You can't not hear it. So this one time I was there, sitting there at Shui Min, and when in the morning, sitting at 9 a.m, they were, I'm not exaggerating, there were 4 different weddings happening at the same time, kind of circular around the meditation center. And the meditation center isn't that big. It's not like acres and acres. So it's kind of on each side, incredibly loud. And he was like, he loved it. He goes, this is so great for meditation. This is so great for practice. Because you really just bring awareness to what's happening in the mind, the hearing, aversion, whatever. Steady awareness, just keeping on being steady with awareness with whatever's happening. Wisdom reveals where the suffering really is. And it's true. So back to his story, which was milder than that. He was sitting and listening to his teacher, Shui Yu Min, talk. There's some really loud, loud, loud sounds just outside the window. And he noticed a little aversion in his mind to the sounds because he couldn't hear his teacher so well. And so he was getting averse, and then he'd listen, try straining to hear the teacher, hear a little, and the sound would go up and he'd get averse. And as with so many of us, caught in that for a while. Right? What's happening is these sounds are blocking the teacher. Don't they know I'm here for that? And I'm averse. I shouldn't be averse, but this is what's happening. Of course, I'm averse because this shouldn't be happening. And then he realized, okay, as we all, what's the practice here? Awareness, hearing. Oh my God, it's loud. Aversion, unpleasant. Aversion, the thoughts that whip up from the aversion. It's their fault. Why can't he speak louder? He should have a microphone. This shouldn't, you know, thoughts. Aware, noticing how the thoughts, unrecognized, strengthen the aversion. Be with the aversion as it is rather than with the thoughts, the aversion kind of goes down. Just noticing that, not trying to do it right, just noticing that. And at some point, with a steady awareness, that wisdom, that aha comes in, oh, the suffering here is the aversion. Based on the view, this should not be happening. Can you relate to that ever arising in your experience, even today? And we say, oh, it's okay. I should be okay with it. I should be equanimous with it. You know, we know all the right words. But in the background, not awareness hasn't quite seen the view. I can be equanimous because I'm such a good yogi, but this shouldn't be happening. And once that's recognized with awareness, it's not a me doing, oh yeah, that's you, attachment to that view. Oh, but it is happening. This is how it is now. In that moment, that's a moment of wisdom, a moment of panya, not a moment of him doing or me doing. But sometimes previous experience can help us say, okay, come back and be with the aversion. That's wisdom from previous experience. But anyway, once that's seen at that moment, the aversion isn't so strong. Oh, this is how it is. And then the wisdom that comes can bring along the wholesome qualities. Oh, well, I could actually get up and move my seat closer to the teacher, duh. And, you know, and you notice how sometimes getting so caught in the reactivity or blaming ourselves for it gets in the way of just clear seeing, I could just get up and move closer. Oh, but it isn't, just get up and move closer. So simple. This is not like being incredibly brilliant, awakened person. It's nothing personal at all. The steadiness of awareness is suddenly, oh, that's what's happening. But it takes this commitment I was talking about, the willingness that after we're lost in the aversion or the self-judge, I'll come back, okay, what's happening now? Hearing, oh my God, unpleasant, oh, aversion, I hate this, I'm hating it, feels like this. To keep landing, opening into, relaxing into the present moment, with wise view, with wise attitude, again and again and again, right? So in a very simple way that shows, And I mean, people even mentioned today, different things happen at home and the mind, well, this shouldn't be happening on a retreat. I shouldn't have to do this or this shouldn't arise. This isn't huge suffering, but it's a sense of conflict. That's why we say bring the awareness along with whatever's going on, whatever's going on. It's the steadiness of this awareness that's setting up the condition for a moment of clear seeing. Oh, that's what's happening. And I think you can get a sense. I mean, you all know this. This is nothing new. I'm just trying to highlight stuff and why we emphasize the perseverance. But how in that moment, say with Utejaniya, with the noise and everything still going on, and maybe he didn't, he still couldn't hear his teacher, but the suffering's gone. Well, this is how it is now. And one can act appropriately. Right? Now that's a very, really simple example of how the cause and effect of seeing what's really going on, what's the cause for the effect of all this discomfort and aversion right now? You know, we're not saying that the curiosity, we have to go back and analyze our whole past. You could go there, you know, why, you know, but just even in the moment, that's simple. It really enables us to perceive in that way. And the same process works all the way through to the most profound levels of seeing how the mind and body works and how we get caught in suffering. Learning to trust, because it's impersonal. It's not something we have to create the wisdom. When I kind of started to, I hadn't heard it put in that way before so much until Sanitajaniya talked about it that way. I mean, it's still true no matter, but I hadn't really heard it put in that way. And that was like such a huge relief. It's like, oh, I don't have to figure out what's the wise thing to do in this situation. It's more like this open up back with what's happening. Aversion, the mind's filled with aversion. And what I've learned, and this is what Carol's learned from me, when aversion is completely coloring awareness, there's no way to see clearly what's the wise thing to do. Aversion is coloring everything. But wisdom knows that. Oh, this is aversion. Aversion's like this, and you don't have to do anything else. That's where people go, oh, it's too easy. Okay, you say just notice aversion and it's all fine. It's too easy. But hang in with that aversion. Well, I don't know how it is for you. I'm picking aversion because that's really a very unpleasant experience for me. And when I'm in aversion and not seeing it acting from it, unfortunately, I think it becomes an unpleasant experience for others. And this is one of the reasons we really want to see how the mind works. But for some people, greed, I mean, I have plenty of greed, don't get me wrong, but it doesn't trigger reactivity in my particular mind setup in the same way aversion does. But for some people, greed is just unbearable. It's just how the particular habits of mind work. It's not a right or a wrong. Our job is to see it with right view and keep on seeing it while it's happening without needing to manipulate or fix it. Okay, another example. It's going to give different examples. I hope it's bringing out different points. And by the fourth one, you might go, all right, already. It's the same example. So I'll give another simple daily life one. For me, I learned years ago when I need to give a talk, it's usually been in the evening, you know, like around 7 in the evening. And now it's in the afternoon, which is different. My energy system is such that say if we have dinner at the retreat center or something and there's a little sweet for dessert, any little sweet, I've really learned that if I eat sweets, by the time the talk comes, my energy system is crashing. My mind's kind of crashing, a little spaced out all over the place. So I've seen, how did I learn that? Not from some idea that sweets are bad. I know sweets aren't good for you, but I don't really have the view sweets are bad. I like sweets. I don't pig out on them, but I like them, you know? So I don't know if it's, oh, it's bad, I shouldn't. But I just, over a lot of times of going to give a talk and having had a little sweet, and then other times not, I mean, I still could come and go in terms of lucidity, don't get me wrong, but I've just seen enough with a sweep that that's how it is. So that's a piece of wisdom, of clear seeing, okay? But that doesn't mean, but that's still, that doesn't mean you see it once and then it's like that forever, right? Because nothing is forever. This is the thing with the steady 24/7 of awareness. We don't get to say, now I see, if I have a sweet, it's not, I never have to see that again. Every single time, awareness needs to be there to see. Every time I'm a little hungry, or maybe they made some amazing dessert at the retreat center that I know from long years of experience will be gone by the time I come back from the talk. You put a nice sweet out, and a staff at a meditation center, I don't know what it is. I guess it's because there's not so many other things people can do for sense pleasures. It's gone, you know, in 2.5 seconds. I know that. So there could be greed, there could be, and so each time is new. Each time is to bring in the steady awareness, but the strength of having wisdom, having seen that and really knowing the cause and effect, I find over the years, each time it's so much more likely that wisdom sees the greed and kind of goes, it's not worth it. It just puts it down. It's not a struggle. It's not Carol renouncing anything. It's wisdom saying, do I want this memory of past? Is this happening in the moment? And the wisdom just goes, the wanting isn't worth it. And the wanting in that moment doesn't make sense, and it's abandoned. It's not an act of Carol doing some heroic thing. It's wisdom based on steady experience. It just knows how it is. So that gets strengthened, that wisdom, that understanding every time. But there could still be a time when the energy is low or the mind is distracted or it's really special something, whatever, you know, or not even that. You're just talking. I'm talking to a lot of people and distracted, and you're just eating, you know, when you're talking, eating with 20 people and you're all talking and there's just a plate of cookies on the table. You know how easy it is to just be eating those cookies and not even know you're doing it, right? I know what I'm doing. I'm talking to people. It's like, so there's all different conditions. Our practice is just to keep on practicing awareness. And there may be a time that I did eat the cookies without awareness or with awareness. And then you just keep on paying attention and see what happens. So this is a simple example again, but this is how it works in our life and how the wisdom really doesn't see the craving or the aversion. There's not so much delusion. But some moments, the wisdom isn't strong and the wanting is. It's nothing steady state. If we're taking this personally at all, if it's Carol owning the wisdom or Carol owning the greed, that's the extra layer of suffering on top of it. And towards the end of this, or maybe I'll do a whole nother reflection another night, but the steadiness of this awareness with my view is what really allows for the deep perception again and again of anatta, of the fact that there is no steady anything that's Carol, even though that sense feels there. But I'm not going to go so much at this moment. I'm going to give another example then from a yogi at a retreat at IMS, Utejaniya. It was in a big group and a long time ago. Some of you may have been there. It was a long time ago, but I loved it because, I know. You had an order to things. I did have an order. I want to read this first before that from Dingo Kensi. This might be kind of strong. I've been talking about pretty simple, not really very difficult examples. Although in the moment of greed, the moment of aversion, even to a sound, it's huge. But, you know, I haven't been giving like world suffering examples. This may be a little intense, but for some reason, it's been speaking to me lately. From Dingo Kensi Rinpoche, I love reading him. I don't know if you've ever read him. I've never met him. But a lot of people I know who didn't know him think maybe he was really totally realized, who knows, but they say, people I know who knew him, that they really felt that it seemed like every moment, whatever he was doing, he really had the motivation of bodhicitta, really caring for beings and teaching all the time. And anyway, just a little plug. If you want to read him, I always get inspired. He's so much on compassion. Anyway, all the sorrows of, and he's tough. It's not like, oh yeah, la la. He's tough. He's really tough, because this is where real wisdom and compassion comes. Anyway, all the sorrows of samsara, you know what I mean by samsara, the round of suffering and wanting and births and deaths, all the sorrows of samsara, wars, famines, all the sorrows arise from hatred and the other inner poisons, hatred, greed, confusion. All the sorrows of samsara arise from these inner poisons. Then he says, when injurious thoughts prevail in the world, he's talking about now, and people think of nothing much but harming each other, the general welfare of the world declines daily. I think I had just been reading the news when I read that. That's why I feel like that sometimes, you know? And so many people just think of nothing but harming each other. The general welfare of the world declines daily. If people's minds are permeated with compassion, with the wish to help one another, the general welfare of the world steadily increases. So taking that, it's like, okay, that's obvious. And hearing that, okay, the inner poisons cause suffering. Compassion, well-being, metta brings good to the world. Of course, we think, yes, that's how I want to live. That's why I practice. I mean, that's not a big jump. So why can't we do that, right? The inner poisons, greed, hatred, confusion, and all the different mind states that arise out of that. I'm projecting, because I don't know all your hearts and minds, but here we all are after all these years. I don't think we would keep practicing if we didn't have the deep, in some way, whatever your language is, motivation to awaken our hearts and minds in order not only to free ourselves from suffering, but to bring that freedom from suffering, that compassion into this world that, my God, needs it so much. I figure each one of us in any moment that we're able to bring in compassion and wisdom, rather than, maybe we don't have injurious thoughts, okay? I doubt if many of us are not really wanting to harm each other. But the inner poisons have all different levels. That's what we're working with. Those moments of aversion at that guy making the sound. It's just in the judgment. It's looking and saying, wow, yeah, that's what's bringing suffering into the world, loka, right now, as it's manifesting in this particular heart and mind, which is part of the world. So with our deepest, deepest commitment, you know, and wish to it, we've been on the path all these years. And hopefully you've seen some change. We have seen change. Like the Dalai Lama says, look back over, don't look, you know, 3 weeks ago to see if you've changed, if you've woken up. Look over the last 5 years, 10 years of your life of practice. Do you notice any change for yourself? I do notice for myself, there's a lot less aversion, and what aversion is a lot less driving and strong than it used to be. Still plenty. Because as we deepen with wisdom and our ability, our willingness to stay with the poisons when they're arising, rather than to take it personally and try and pretend it's not happening, as that deepens, our commitment and our wisdom and our capacity to hold with loving awareness whatever's happening, then the more and more subtle ways that these poisons manifest show up, which I think is great. But that's one of the reasons why sometimes on retreat, or sometimes off retreat, people say, I've been practicing, and now, all of a sudden, I just see greed every time I turn around. I feel like I'm 100 times more greedy than I used to be. What's going on? You know? And then judgment and personal, taking it personally is added to that, and that's a big mess. But what's going on is steady awareness. She's all the little doo, 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 moment of greed, no big deal. See it, see it, see it. So what? but we didn't notice it before. So little moments, little moments, little moments would all coalesce into one big thing, and then we'd notice that. But now you notice little moments, and that's great. That's steady awareness with wisdom, seeing what's going on, seeing what's going on. So how come we can't just manifest wisdom, compassion, even when we want to? So back to the story, you might have thought I lost my thread, but I remember I was back. Andrea's laughing because it's possible, but I actually didn't for once. So this person was saying in IMS, if you've ever sat there, when you walk into the dining room at lunchtime, and most centers probably do this now, there's like a little blackboard or a little thing that has the menu for the day, right, for the lunch, what's being served. And the person was saying, well, I have these very severe food allergies to different things that I just really don't feel. I don't die of it or something, but really don't feel well if I eat it. And I know that. And so I've taken for this retreat, I've made this really clear intention for myself out of compassion, out of wisdom, that I'm not going to eat those foods. And in that moment, you know, we all do this. It's very clear. It's true in that moment, very clear intention from wisdom, from knowing the effect of the cause of eating that food, and from non-greed and compassion. But that was that moment. And then the person said, I walked into the dining room today and the menu was up there and it's the things I shouldn't eat, but it was a particular iteration of the things I shouldn't eat that I just loved. And I found myself at the table, at the serving table. Okay, these are my words. The person probably didn't quite say it this way. Pile in the stuff on the plate, eating it all, then walking away, beating myself up and also feeling bad physically. So what's wrong? I had this very clear intention. Why didn't it manifest? And I could say a lot about it. Sayadaw Tejaniya, you know, he can be kind of very pithy, and sometimes I think it might hurt people's feelings. But he just said briefly, I'll allow this. Strong greed, weak wisdom. And then in that moment, it's just not like it hurts people's feelings when they're taking it personally, as if he was saying to that person, you as a person have weak wisdom and strong greed. That's the definition of you as a person. Isn't it easy to hear it that way? But he's talking in that moment because it was just that moment. And so we'll all have that where we have this really clear wisdom from awareness and understanding. But in the next moment, the wisdom, if it's the greed or the aversion, just comes up. It shoots up so strong. It might even be recognized with awareness. But the energy of the greed at that time is just stronger than the energy of the awareness, and we act on it. Can any of you relate to that? At all? I really hope so. Or else you're beyond it, you know, and that's even better. And then this brings a question. Someone brought up another story of Tejaniya's today that I want to say why, or what often happens then. The greed or the aversion or whatever is strong, the awareness is weak, the wisdom's weak and the awareness is weak. And so following on, piling the plate, eating it, it's basically, if you're doing that with awareness, it's pretty unpleasant because it's like, ugh, I don't want to be doing, why am I doing this? So our habit for many of us at times when we don't have awareness is when something's really unpleasant, mostly our habit is turn away, right? I mean, you know this from the second noble truth, if it's pleasant, we go for it. Greed, if it's unpleasant, we don't want to be there. Aversion, deep-seated again. When awareness is a little bit weak and we start acting on the greed. Someone brought up another story of Utejaniya's about a person who was saying how greedy they were for shrimp. That I've heard him tell this story 10 million times. I have to say it because I think he really likes shrimp. He keeps telling the story. But anyway, they really wanted the shrimp and they saw the greed in the line. They really saw it. And then I think he didn't really say the story that the greed actually completely went away. And then they were saying, I don't know what to do. Can I eat the shrimp or not? And he goes, go ahead, eat the shrimp. It's fine, eat the shrimp, because the greed's gone. But he doesn't always say that. And so you can hear the story as thinking, well, okay, I saw the green, so what? Eat the shrimp, do whatever, it doesn't matter. How is that helpful? It's not so helpful without awareness. So what we do, and this is again requiring that faith in the Buddha Dhamma, that faith in that bringing awareness to the difficult, to the unpleasant with right view is what's going to lead to wisdom and freedom. So eating the shrimp, piling your plate with the stuff you know you don't want, and you really had this intention, so you see yourself doing what you don't want to do, right? So it's like what Joseph calls more or less mindfulness. You kind of know you're piling your plate. You're not like really thinking about a movie you saw last week. You know you're standing there piling your plate, but it's not that sense of complete relaxing into it's like this now, where you really feel the wanting, you feel the piling, you notice the self-judgment, and you're doing it anyway. You're blaming yourself. Your awareness goes through the whole thing. You eat it, you go through the whole thing. You don't have to judge yourself. If you are, that's just another thing awareness is noticing, but that's extra. Then you feel sick later, you're aware of that. That's in some ways more difficult than just turning off the awareness, okay, I'm not gonna be able to do the right thing here, so let's take an awareness-free zone for a while. Let me just go wild here, and then I'll bring awareness back and beat myself up with awareness. No. Bring the awareness along. How else does the wisdom that the poisons, the torments, the kilesas actually are suffering, how else is that going to arise? Except through the wise awareness experiencing in the moment the suffering of those poisons. Otherwise, it stays intellectual. Yeah, aversion's bad, and when I act from it, it's not good, and I know it doesn't feel good. Can I be aware through that? It's not a pleasant experience. That's okay. But you get a sense, it's a way different relationship to it. And so when he was saying it, so eat the shrimp, at that point, if the craving, the aversion's really gone, that's another thing. You're sitting there really being with the wanting, just noticing it. And often it does just go, like I was describing about for me eating sweets before a talk. Often it does just go. For me before the talk, the wanting's gone. The wisdom says, don't eat it because I know the effect isn't good. But say that person standing in front of the shrimp, the wanting's really gone. They're not acting from wanting. Wanting isn't becoming the motivator for speech, mind, and action. That's where the suffering in the world comes from the poisons, when we act from greed, because we can't see clear what brings happiness or not. When we act from aversion, when we act from delusion, me, me, it's all about me, I'm the center of everything. But when the mind's clear, and you say, eat the shrimp or don't eat the shrimp, it's fine either way. It's not that you have to never eat it because you were craving it before. Is this making sense or is it confusing? So it's really, as this practice continues, the steadiness of awareness, more and more, it's about really awareness seeing what's going on in the mind that's aware. Wholesome, unwholesome, wholesome, unwholesome. And the real suffering in ourselves in the world, just feeling the unwholesome, but when that becomes the motivator for action. Oh my, I thought I didn't have much to say and I see it's actually time that I should stop. So to the whole thing about personality view, which it really leads into the next time. But I wanna again hearken just to end back to the curiosity that Andrea was speaking about, because that interest, that curiosity is really what Dhamma curiosity, what feeds our commitment to hang in there when it's difficult, when it's unpleasant. Sayadaw Tejaniya, because we want to learn about the nature of mind and objects, we don't try to calm the mind down or remove objects. Saying we think the mind should be calm and it's not, calm it down. No, it's like, how is it when it's not calm? We don't interfere or control, but observe with awareness because we want to understand how the mind works, how the objects in their natural state. This is right view. What's leading to now? This is all a natural state. This is right view. And just heading into personality view, but more. When we look at our own personal minds, often we see a lot of, this is Tejaniya's note, a lot of negative stuff running around. Is that true for anybody? There's also positive stuff running around. Notice that equally. We need to give equal attention 24/7. Don't also stop paying attention when it gets calm. Oh, I'm struggling. I'm being with a difficult, oh, now it's fine. I can relax and space out. I notice I do that sometimes. That's no better than spacing out when it's difficult. Okay. Mostly we see a lot of negative stuff running around. If we think it is my mind, we start to feel depressed. We get caught up. On the other hand, if we see, if we recognize, and it's not even we, that's just language. If awareness recognizes that the emotions, the feelings that are arising right now, that are being experienced in the moment, they're arising because of past causes and conditions that are having an impact on the present moment. We need to remind ourselves that it's a process. We are a process. It's natural. And our job is just to recognize this is happening now and allow wisdom with right view to simply observe it, to be aware. Appreciate that we are actually aware and remember awareness rather than to complain or judge or take possession of the experience. This is practicing right view. It's like easy with little things. It's hard when we get to the experience of having is one of deep personal habits, personality patterns, fear, whatever. But to say, okay, it's really strong, but just even intellectually, this is arising in this moment as a result of all kinds of past causes and conditions. More immediate ones like the aversion to the sound. I know some of my personality patterns. I can trace it all the way back to, you know, as a young child with my mother. That doesn't mean in the moment of awareness, I go, oh, there's self-denigration. That's right. That came from my mother and this happened. That's thinking, which I can recognize as thinking. But you're like, all right, of course, in certain situations, I recognize this pattern of self-denigration arises. It's just a natural cause and effect. It isn't me. It isn't permanent. It's just what happens. And awareness noticing that is already the movement from samsara to freedom from samsara. Awareness noticing fear isn't afraid. Awareness noticing Carol thinks she's a stupid jerk is not Carol thinking she's a stupid jerk. It's just awareness of a particular mind stream that's arising in this moment, which is no more personal than what I heard on the news. This is intellectually interesting and powerful, but steadiness of awareness reveals this to us moment after moment after moment. Well, I think I have to stop the reflections now. I really thought I only had 10 minutes of stuff to say. Yes, I think I will 24/7. That would be good. Because that sets up the conditions and wisdom takes care of itself. We don't have to remember any of it. But trusting in the Four Noble Truths, there's going to be times it's just too hard to stay with what's happening. And we may need some skillful means, which I'll talk about in the instructions tomorrow. Anyway, okay, I'll stop. Thank you very much for your kind attention, or at least on the surface, it seemed kind. Thank you for staying. Let's just sit quietly, and then there's a couple minutes if you have any questions. But